This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
You know, usually when we talk about making noodles from scratch, there is this this heavy expectation of pure engineering.
Oh, totally. We really do treat it like a science experiment sometimes.
Right. You've got the stainless steel pasta machine clamped to the counter. You're like calculating the exact hydration percentage of your dough.
Mm-hmm. You're aiming for that absolute zero tolerance uniformity.
Exactly. Extruded, rolled, perfectly sliced. We basically treat noodle making like architecture.
We really do. And, you know, there is a deep comfort in that kind of culinary predictability.
Sure. I mean, it's satisfying when it works.
Right. When you look at classic European pasta traditions or even something like Japanese ramen, the goal is often a flawless, continuous strand. The geometry is the whole point.
Yeah, we like our culinary categories to be neat, tidy, and mathematically precise.
Exactly. But then you step into the world of everyday Korean home cooking, and suddenly that pasta machine looks, well, completely ridiculous.
It really does, because we're looking at a dish today that takes that rigid architectural idea of what a noodle is supposed to be, and honestly, it just tears it apart with its bare hands.
It is the absolute definition of a culinary rule breaker, particularly if you're, you know, approaching it strictly from a Western cooking perspective.
Oh, definitely.
It really challenges the fundamental mechanics of how we even interact with dough.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this is an incredibly fun concept for anyone looking to expand their kitchen repertoire.
That's a great one to learn.
Today, we are tailoring this deep dive specifically for you, the curious home cook sitting somewhere outside of Korea. We are exploring the foundational parameters of a really beloved Korean dish called sujebi.
Yes, spelled S-U-J-E-B-I.
Right. Now, officially, according to the dossier we have today on Korean cuisine classifications, this sits squarely in the noodles category.
Which is where the confusion usually starts.
Yeah, because the translations we have completely contradict the visual of a traditional noodle.
Yeah.
I mean, the English search hint is literally hand-torn dough soup, and the Spanish translation is sopa de masa arrancada, which translates word for word to soup of torn dough.
Torn dough.
Yeah.
Not strands, not ribbons, not uniform shapes pushed through a bronze die.
Nope.
Physically ripped chunks of dough.
So I have to push back on this official classification a bit. If I make a ball of dough, rip it into jagged asymmetrical chunks and just toss them in water, how can we legitimately call that a noodle?
I know, it sounds crazy.
It sounds more like a dumpling wrapper that just like gave up halfway through the process. It's deconstructed, rebellious pasta.
It really does sound like a contradiction. But what's fascinating here is how culinary categories actually function when you strip away our cultural biases about geometry.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Well, you are defining a noodle entirely by its shape like a long extruded string.
Right, because that's what a noodle is.
But in the context of sujebi, a noodle is defined by its mechanical function within the ecosystem of the soup.
Oh, I see. So it's about the job it performs in the bowl, not whether it looks like spaghetti on the spoon.
Exactly. Think about the physics of a bowl of soup.
Yeah.
What is the actual job of a noodle?
Well, to carry the broth.
Yeah, and it provides a concentrated source of carbohydrates. It offers a specific, chewy, textural contrast to the liquid broth.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And most importantly, it interacts with the liquid, absorbing flavor while releasing a specific amount of starch into the water to actually change the physical body of the broth itself.
Ah, so it's the textural anchor. And I'm guessing a jagged, torn piece of dough does that job just as well as a perfect linguine strand.
Mechanically speaking, it actually does the job differently and in some ways more dynamically.
Wait, really? How so?
Well, when you extrude or cut a noodle perfectly, you have these clean, smooth edges. But when you tear dough by hand, you create microfissures.
Microfissures, okay.
Yeah, the edges become highly irregular and feathered. This radically increases the surface area of the dough.
Oh, that makes total sense. It's the difference between dropping a pane of smooth glass into water versus like dropping a porous sponge.
That is a brilliant way to visualize it. That sponge-like feathered edge is crucial because of the starch release.
Because it hits the hot water.
Exactly. When those jagged edges hit the boiling broth, the starch granules on the surface of the dough immediately swell and burst.
Oh, wow.
They leach their starches directly into the liquid.
Yeah.
This physically changes the viscosity of the broth.
So it actually thickens the soup.
It goes from being a thin, watery liquid to a silky, slightly thickened, incredibly comforting stew.
So the imperfection is actually a mechanical advantage. The ragged edges are actively doing work. And I imagine that tearing process completely changes the texture when you actually chew it, right?
Oh, entirely. Because you are tearing it with your fingers, no two pieces are identical.
Yeah, obviously.
And even a single piece has varying thickness. Where your fingers pinch and stretch the dough, it becomes paper thin, almost translucent.
Oh, I love that texture in soups.
Right. Those thin edges turn incredibly silky and slippery in the broth.
Mm.
But the center of that same piece of dough remains thicker.
Giving you that bite.
Exactly. Giving you this dense, deeply satisfying al dente chew.
So you're getting two completely different textures, silky and chewy, in a single bite.
Yes.
You literally cannot engineer that kind of varied texture with a machine-cut noodle.
You really can't.
That is fascinating, which actually leads perfectly into the next major revelation we have from the source material about Tsujebi.
Which is?
Well, if we are ditching the pasta machine and the rolling pin, the obvious question for any home cook is about time and labor.
Yes. Making dough from scratch is usually heavily weighted with culinary baggage.
It carries a certain level of dread for a busy cook.
It really does.
When I think of making homemade dough, I immediately picture an entirely lost afternoon.
Oh, completely.
I picture flour coating every surface of my kitchen, a 2-hour resting period, proofing, kneading until my shoulders ache. It's a weekend project.
Yeah, it's not a Tuesday night activity.
But the data we have for Tsujebi lists the difficulty rating as simply easy. And the estimated cooking and prep time is shockingly fast. We are talking about 25 minutes.
25 minutes. From the moment you walk into your kitchen to the moment you are eating a bowl of handmade dough soup.
That is wild to me. That means this isn't a Sunday afternoon event. It's practically a weeknight meal.
It really is designed for that.
You could get home from work on a Tuesday completely exhausted and realistically have scratch-made dough on the table in under half an hour. I have to know the science behind why this is so fast.
It all comes down to gluten.
Because with traditional pasta, I'm resting the dough for at least 30 minutes just to let the gluten relax so I can even roll it out. Why doesn't Tsujebi need that?
The secret to that 25-minute time frame lies entirely in bypassing the strict rules of gluten development.
Okay, explain that.
When you make traditional noodles, you have to knead the dough extensively to align the gluten strands into a strong, highly organized network.
Right, so it holds its shape.
Yeah, you need that structural integrity so the noodle doesn't snap when you stretch it or run it through a machine. And once you agitate that gluten by kneading it, it becomes incredibly elastic and tense.
Right, it springs back. If you try to roll it out immediately, it fights you. It shrinks back like a rubber band, which is why you have to let it rest on the counter.
Exactly. But look at the mechanics of Tsujebi. You aren't stretching this dough into a continuous meter-long strand.
No, you're just ripping it.
Right, you don't need a perfectly aligned, highly structured gluten network. You're just mixing flour and water, maybe a pinch of salt and a drop of oil, until it hydrates and comes together into a cohesive ball.
So you actually want it to be a bit rustic.
Yes.
So I'm guessing a common mistake for an overseas home cook trying this for the first time would be overhinking it. Like, they might stand there kneading the dough for 15 minutes, trying to get it perfectly smooth like a pizza dough.
Yeah.
Completely wasting their time.
That happens all the time. People bring their bread-making habits into a dish that, frankly, just doesn't want them.
Just leave the dough alone.
Exactly. You just mix it until there are no dry spots, give it a minute or two of kneading just to get it unified, and then you're done. The dough is ready.
How fast.
Yes. You literally hold the ball of dough in one hand right over the boiling pot of broth and use your other hand to stretch and tear pieces directly into the water.
I love the tactile nature of that. Just standing over the stove, the steam hitting your hands, pulling pieces off as the soup bubbles.
It is deeply grounding. There's zero machinery between you and the food.
And for a cook who might be intimidated by Korean cuisine, that speed and tactile simplicity has to be a massive confidence booster.
Oh, huge. Often when people outside of Korea look at Korean food, they perceive a very high barrier to entry.
Yeah, they see dishes requiring dozens of side dishes, you know, the banchan.
Right, or they see complex, multi-stage fermentation processes.
Mm.
Or they think they need to visit 3 different specialty grocers to find highly specific cuts of meat.
You assume you need a massive, specialized pantry before you even turn on the stove, but this strips all of that away. You are effectively using pantry staples that almost everyone already has: flour, water, salt.
It connects you to the sheer approachability of Korean home cooking. It proves that you don't need to be intimidated.
Which is great for you listening at home, right? You can just jump in.
Exactly. But that quick 25-minute timeline does introduce a major culinary challenge, which brings us to the actual environment this dough is cooking in.
The broth itself.
The broth itself.
Yes, the flavor profile. If we've got this fast rustic dough and we know the jagged edges are releasing starch to thicken the water, wait, where is the actual flavor coming from? Especially given the parameters we are looking at in the dossier.
The ingredient exclusions for this dish are incredibly revealing.
They really are. The spiciness level is distinctly rated as mild, and the baseline protein profile contains absolutely zero meat.
Zero.
No pork, no beef, no chicken, and no seafood. Furthermore, the information specifically notes that vegetarian substitutions are a solid yes.
Mm-hmm.
It also states that specific allergens and religious dietary restrictions are not specified, meaning this dish doesn't rely on rigidly fixed, potentially restrictive ingredients.
We're looking at a highly adaptable, incredibly clean, minimal canvas.
Which completely flips the script on the global stereotype of Korean food.
Oh, completely.
When a lot of people think of Korean cuisine, they picture dishes glowing bright red, loaded with chili flakes and gochujang. You know, that an intensely savory, thick, fermented chili paste.
Right, or they picture the heavy, rich, fat-rendered world of Korean barbecue.
Yeah, but this, it's not fiery, and it's not a heavy meat stew.
And this raises an important question for the cook. If you are not relying on the intense umami of roasted beef bones simmering for 10 hours, or the rich coating fat of pork belly, or the complex loud heat of a spiced chili broth.
Yeah, how on earth do you build deep, satisfying flavor in just 25 minutes?
It's the million-dollar question.
Right, because if you are just boiling flour and water in a mild vegetarian broth for a few minutes, there is a very real danger of it tasting like hot, wet cardboard. How do you extract flavor without time?
You have to leverage the science of fast-acting umami.
Okay, I'm listening.
When you make a traditional meat stock, you are slowly breaking down collagen and extracting inosinate, a type of umami compound found in muscle meat.
And that takes hours.
Exactly. But the vegetarian ingredients commonly used in Korean broths rely on a completely different umami compound, glutamate.
Glutamates, like what you find in tomatoes or Parmesan cheese.
Precisely. And in the Korean pantry, the king of fast glutamate extraction is dried kelp, known as dasima, often paired with dried shiitake mushrooms.
Oh, I've seen that combo.
Yeah. The cellular structure of dried kelp is such that when it hits simmering water, it releases its glutamates almost instantly.
Wait, instantly?
Pretty much. You don't need 8 hours. You need about 10 minutes to create a broth that is deeply savory, earthy, and complex.
So even if the cook is making a vegetarian substitution, as the parameters encourage, they aren't sacrificing depth.
Not at all.
If they drop a piece of dried kelp and a few dried mushrooms into the water while they mix the dough, the broth is essentially finished by the time the dough is ready to tear.
That is the magic of it. And it explains why the spiciness is kept mild.
Why is that?
Because when a dish doesn't have the loud flavors of heavy meats or intense palate-blowing spice, it relies entirely on subtlety. If you flooded this broth with chili paste, you would completely mask the delicate, earthy sweetness of the wheat flour in the dough, and you'd overpower the clean, oceanic umami of the kelp.
It's about balance. Without all that heavy metal distortion from intense spice, you can actually hear the acoustic instruments playing in the background.
I love that analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And those acoustic instruments are usually very humble vegetables, because this is a flexible everyday dish. You use what you have. A classic addition is sliced potato.
Oh, adding potato is brilliant. That would amplify the starch effect we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
As the potato simmers and breaks down slightly, it's going to release its own starch, joining forces with the starch leaching out of the torn dough edges.
Yes, it creates a layering of starches. You get a broth that feels substantial. It coats the back of a spoon. It feels incredibly warming and gentle.
Sounds amazing.
You might also add some sliced zucchini for a pop of freshness and a subtle sweetness, and finish it with some chopped green onions for a sharp, bright contrast to all that mild comfort.
The emotional goal of this dish is clearly comfort. It's not trying to challenge you. It's not trying to make you sweat. It's the food you want when it's pouring rain outside or when you are recovering from a cold.
Or when you just need a meal that feels fundamentally gentle on your system.
Exactly.
It paints a very different picture of Korean food culture than what usually makes it to the flashy, trend-driven restaurant menus overseas.
It really does.
We get so caught up in the bold, exportable, highly stylized dishes that we forget every culinary culture has its quiet, democratic, everyday comfort foods.
Democratic is the perfect word for it. Because allergens and religious restrictions aren't a rigid barrier here, almost anyone can eat this.
Right.
If you have a friend coming over who is strictly vegan or someone who gets heartburn from spicy food, you don't have to panic.
You just adapt it.
Yeah, you just use a great mushroom and vegetable stock, tear some flour and water dough into it, and you have a phenomenal, authentic meal. It functions less like a rigid recipe and more like a deeply forgiving template.
A template for torn dough comfort. And honestly, mastering a template like that is far more valuable for a home cook than just memorizing a strict list of ingredients.
Absolutely. Okay, we have covered some serious culinary science today, and I want to make sure we lock in these concepts for everyone listening who is probably mentally checking their pantry right now to see if they have flour and potatoes.
Let's pull the key insights together.
First, we completely redefined what a noodle can be. Tsujibi proves that a noodle is defined by its function, not its geometry.
Mm-hmm.
By tearing the dough instead of cutting it, you create jagged, feathered edges that leach starch into the broth, naturally thickening the soup while providing a brilliant contrast between silky edges and a chewy center.
And that tearing method directly impacts our second major takeaway,
mm-hmm.
the sheer speed and accessibility.
Right. 25 minutes from start to finish. By abandoning the pasta machine, you are also abandoning the need for massive gluten development.
Which saves so much time.
You don't need to knead it for 15 minutes, and you don't need to let it rest. You just hydrate the flour, mix it, and tear it straight into the pot. It takes the dread out of scratch-made dough.
Which leaves us with the flavor profile.
A completely mild, meatless canvas. No pork, beef, chicken, or seafood required. It relies on the fast-acting glutamates of ingredients like dried kelp or mushrooms to build deep umami in minutes rather than hours.
Yeah, it proves that authentic Korean food doesn't always have to be fiery red or loaded with heavy barbecue meats.
The real takeaway here goes beyond just learning how to make a bowl of tsujibi. It is about shifting your entire perspective on weeknight cooking.
I completely agree.
It teaches you that you do not need a pantry full of hard-to-source specialty ingredients to capture the authentic spirit of a cuisine. You don't need to overcomplicate things to create profound comfort.
Sometimes the best meals are the ones that require the absolute least amount of fuss. You just need to understand the mechanics of your ingredients.
Right.
Which leads me to a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on as you head back into your own kitchen.
All right.
We spent this entire deep dive exploring how tsujibi openly breaks the rules of what a noodle is supposed to look like.
Mm.
It completely embraces the irregular, the torn, and the chaotic.
Yeah, the rebellious pasta.
Right. So my question for you is this. If a noodle doesn't have to be a perfect, mathematically precise string, but can simply be a rustic, hand-torn piece of dough, what other strict culinary rules in your kitchen are you blindly following that you could start tearing apart today?
Oh, I love that. Little culinary rebellion to wrap things up. What a fantastic place to end this deep dive. Thank you so much for exploring the cozy, rule-breaking world of tsujibi with us. Keep questioning those kitchen rules, keep experimenting with that dough, and we will catch you on the next deep dive. Goodbye.
Take care.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.